transhumanism. It's an international intellectual cultural movement supporting the use of new sciences and technologies to enhance human mental and physical abilities and aptitudes, and also improve what it regards as undesirable and unnecessary aspects of the human condition, such as disease, aging, involuntary death, suffering, and also stupidity. In a moment, special roundtable discussion throughout the night on transhumanism on Coast to Coast AM. Three guests for you this hour. James Gardner will stay with us for the entire program, and a number of guests will be coming in and out throughout the night. James Gardner, a well-known, widely published complexity theorist, his first book, Biocosm, selected as one of the 10 best science books of several years ago, 2003, by the editors of Amazon.com, and was featured in major stories in Time, U.S. News and World Report, Harper's, National Geographic, and other major publications. He is a regular lecturer at a prominent scientific institutions around the world, contributing author of a forthcoming book to be published by NASA, Culture and Cosmos. He's our guest tonight. Hey, Jim, welcome back.
Thank you, George.
My pleasure. And a couple other guests, of course, Charlie Kam, conference chairman of Transvision 2007. Charlie will talk about that. He'll host that event as the master of ceremonies. He's a member of the Extropian Institute, the World Transhumanist Association, Immortalists Institute, World Future Society, Singularity Institute in Alcor. As president of Greenpack Construction, Charlie also builds state-of-the-art solar paneled and powered homes that implement all types of recycling. He believes that the potential of solar power to safely and cleanly solve most of our world's energy problems. Charlie Kam. Hey, Charlie, how are you?
I'm good, George. How are you?
Good. Good to have you with us. And, of course, Ray Kurzweil is an inventor, entrepreneur, author, futurist called The Restless Genius by the Wall Street Journal and The Ultimate Thinking Machine by Forbes. Kurzweil's ideas of the future have been touted by as many fans, ranging from Bill Gates to Bill Clinton. His most recent national best-selling book is called The AIDS of Spiritual Machines, and he's with us, too, on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ray, how are you?
Great to be with you.
Good. We're all here. Jim, let's, you know, I had a little definition of transhumanism, but see if you can help put it into human terms for us. What is it?
Well, I think that's a great definition that that you provided for your listeners. The way I like to think about the underlying theme of transhumanism is captured by that famous song that was linked to a recent presidential campaign, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. Its basic premise, I think, is that the age of evolution is not over. It's really only just begun, and that humanity is not essentially the final product, that we're in the process of becoming something more than we are today.
Charlie Kam, what do you think?
Oh, I agree. I agree with Jim's definition, and I think that humans are not the end-all. You know, we're a stepping stone, and I think it's not really that far away where we're going to be moving out of this biological substrate that we exist in currently and going into more of a technological one.
Ray Kurzweil, you take an interesting perspective to this, being the inventor and the futurist. Give me your perspective on transhumanism.
Well, an important perspective is that our technological change is going about 1,000 times faster than biological change. And we're really at the early stages of really extending who we are by merging with our technology. We're now able to understand, simulate, and reprogram our biology as information processes. We essentially have outdated software running in our bodies. We have 23,000 genes, which are really software programs that evolved thousands of years ago. And we now have the means to actually change them, not just designer babies, but designer baby boomers. We can turn genes off with RNA interference. We can add new genes with gene therapy. We're also going to be adding non-biological systems, for example, blood cell-sized devices that can go inside our bloodstream and keep us healthy from inside, and also go into our brains and interact with our biological neurons. And if all that sounds very futuristic, I point out we're doing it already with dozens of very impressive experiments in animals. One scientist cured type 1 diabetes in rats with a blood cell size device. Another set of scientists at MIT actually have a device that can scout out cancer cells and destroy them. So this is what's happening today. And one further point I'd make is that all of this is accelerating. It's getting faster and faster. The power of information technology is doubling every year. That's a factor of 1,000 in 10 years. And 10 years from now, these technologies will be quite mature. Biotechnology will be mature. Nanotechnology will be getting traction. And we'll really be changing who we are, which is really not a new story. I mean, life expectancy was 37 in 1800. So we're already extending our horizons, but this is going to go into high gear in the years ahead.
You know, Ray, I played a game of chess today with a computer online that beat me in about 20 moves. A few years ago, I might have been able to beat those little electronic games that play chess with you.
Well, it's an interesting that you bring that up, because in the 80s, a routine chess player like you or me could defeat the best chess machines. But I saw that the chess machines were doubling in power every year. They'd added 40 points to their chess score, and that put the crossover in 1998. So I predicted by 1998, a computer would take the world chess champion. Well, that seemed ridiculous in the 80s, and Kasparov was asked about that in 93, and he scoffed at it. But then it soared past him in 97. These technologies progress exponentially, and people don't think that way. They think linearly. They think the current pace of change will continue at the current pace, and don't take the acceleration of technology into consideration. So that's why things move more quickly, particularly when we take a long-term perspective.
Jim, humanity has always been looking for ways to improve our suffering, improve on disease, aging, and involuntary death. Why does it seem that now, through this definition of transhumanism, that it just might work this time?
Well, I think Ray captured it very well. We're at the beginning of a stage of accelerating change in which change is occurring with an exponentially increasing rate. And that really does change the nature of change itself. It means that things that were inconceivable a couple of years ago are now imminent possibilities. As Ray has written eloquently in his most recent book, The Singularity is Near, that means that it's very likely that within a matter of decades, human intelligence will no longer be the dominant form of intelligence on this planet.
Charlie, we've got you only for this hour, so I want to chat with you a little bit here about this conference that you're putting on, Transvision 2007, where you've put together a number of people, including Jim Gardner and Ray here, for this event. What is it, and why did everyone decide to put one of these together?
Well, this conference is a conference that's held once a year. It's an annual international conference held all around the world. Last year it was in Helsinki, Finland. The year before that it was in Caracas, Venezuela. This year I petitioned to have it held in Chicago. And one of the things that I was hoping to do was to bring it more into the mainstream, bring it more into the forefront of the public eye, because this concept of transhumanism and nanotechnology and everything that Ray and James were just talking about need to be more out there. People are not aware of it. I mean, when you talk to people, they're not familiar with the term transhumanism, let alone nanotechnology, which is really pervasive in our society. It's just that people don't know it. And so that's why in the idea of bringing it to Chicago, I knew that I had an opportunity to make it bigger. And I thought in my mind, I said, well, and this may be, you know, unfortunate or however you want to look at it, but one way to bring attention is to bring celebrities to it. So I went around and tried to figure out who would be a likely candidate that would make it, you know, that would fit into this. And well, who came to mind but William Shatner? Captain Kirk, you know, is the leading character that represented a futuristic TV show where it wasn't you know, about chaos in the future, but where people got along and it was advanced. In any case, he's going to come to our conference and he's going to talk about things that were on the Starship Enterprise that are now starting to come to fruition or will be in the near future. Not to mention, he's a big fan of Ray Kurzweil. So, you know, having him there, we're going to have Ed Begley Jr. talk about, you know, electric cars and things that he's doing. And, you know, I'm trying to bring more attention to this, to these concepts.
Okay, and I assume you're going to get some major media showing up at this. At least I hope you do.
Well, yeah, I mean, we do have, you know, all the local affiliates that are trying to, you know, they want to come there, ABC, NBC, CBS, because they all have their own people trying to come to the event. And, you know, I'm trying to get as much publicity. It's great to be on your show to try to get the word out there. And we've got... And it's kind of like a snowball effect as it comes down the hill, getting bigger. Because when they hear, you know, for example, if Ray is going to be there, other people, other scientists that are of his stature want to be a part of it. So it's kind of taken off in that way. And we do have a lot of great thinkers like, you know, Ray and James and Aubrey de Grey. And, you know, there's just a lot of them. And if you want to find out more about it, you can go to the website. That's that. Transvision2007.com.
All right, very good. You know, Ray, every time I think of things in the future, I think of the Jetsons, how quickly and how close we're getting to what that cartoon series portrayed many years ago.
I think it's important to understand there's actually three different revolutions, and they're all coming because they're all becoming information technology. One is genetics, where you know, biology and medicine used to be hit or miss. We just happened to find something that works, but it was really unpredictable. And now we're actually being able to reprogram our biology just like we reprogram our computers. And I have a whole thesis that when something becomes information technology, it doubles in power every year. I mean, you can see that with your digital cameras and your iPods, but it's now becoming true of our biology.
Mm-hmm.
And these technologies will be literally 1,000 times more effective 10 years from now. And according to my models, we'll be adding more than a year every year to your remaining life expectancy, which will be kind of a tipping point. And then we have nanotechnology, where we'll be able to basically reprogram matter and energy as information processes. So right now, you can email a file and turn it into a movie or a sound recording or a book. In the future, you'll be able to email a blouse or a meal, actually physical products, and a three-dimensional printer will create three-dimensional products from very inexpensive materials from information.
That you can use or just look at?
That you can use.
My gosh.
Real products. And that's coming in about 20 years. And then the third, probably the most important, is artificial intelligence at the human level. We already have hundreds of software systems that are doing tasks that used to require human intelligence, like intelligently routing information on emails and cell phone calls, designing products, landing and flying airplanes, sending intelligent weapon systems, making billions of dollars of intelligent financial transactions each every day, detecting credit card fraud, automatically diagnosing disease, and so on. But in the future, we'll capture the full range of human intelligence. Computers that could simulate the entire human brain will be inexpensive in the 2020s, and we will have models and simulations of all of the regions of the brain by the 2020s. We already have about 20 of them out of several hundred. And this is also progressing exponentially. That's really the key issue. These technologies will actually be a billion times more powerful than they are today, 25 years from now, and they're already quite impressive. So this will, you know, greatly transform very quickly who we are. And there's some controversy, you know, should we change human nature? But in my view, the real essence of what human nature is, we are the species that seeks to change who we are. And no other species does that. And if that weren't the case, you know, none of us on this program would probably be here because human life expectancy was 25 a thousand years ago.
Sounds like some of the material that my dear friend Jerry Purnell, the author, would like. I don't know if you know him, Ray, or not.
I'm familiar with some of his
work.
Yeah.
Jim, you know, when you and I talked back in February of the intelligent universe.
Yes.
That basically, in essence, was also transhumanism information, wasn't it?
It is, and that's why I believe I was invited to participate in this conference, because my sort of area of expertise and my focus is on kind of the ultimate fate of evolving intelligence in the cosmos. And as I think all of Ray and I certainly know, my vision is that the cosmos eventually will become what amounts to a thinking entity, a living entity. But to get there, we're going to have to go through some evolutionary stages that amount to transhuman intelligence. We're going to have to transcend our current capabilities. And that's where my sort of ultimate vision links up with the thinking of the transhumanist community.
Let's talk about singularity for a moment, Ray, because your book, The Singularity Is Near, give me your take on that. What is, in your mind, singularity?
Well, the singularity refers to a point in human history in the future, by my reckoning and models, about 40 years from now, where time will be so, progress, technological change will be so rapid that we won't be able to follow it, at least without enhancing who we are and essentially merging with our technology. By 2030, we will be routinely extending our mental capabilities by sending these intelligent nanorobots in our bloodstream into our brains through our capillaries, interacting with our biological neurons, and really extending our memory and pattern recognition capabilities, putting our brain directly on the internet, providing direct brain-to-brain communication, providing full immersion virtual reality involving all the senses directly into the nervous system. And then once that happens, it's important to point out that the non-biological portion of our intelligence will double every year. It'll grow exponentially. That's not the case with our biological intelligence, which is essentially fixed. So you get out to 2040s, and the non-biological portion of the intelligence of human civilization will be a billion times greater than the biological portion. And that's really a singularity. That's a profound change that we can really not fully understand the implications of, at least without, you know, enhancing ourselves with this technology.
You know, Ray, technically, even right now, a person who has a clogged artery will get a stent put in, titanium. They're working on a number of other things. I guess one could say that he's part human.
Absolutely.
In part machine,
even
right?
A better example is if you have Parkinson's disease, you can get the portion of your brain that was destroyed by the disease replaced with a computer that now performs that function, and the neurons in the vicinity that used to get signals from the biological neurons that were destroyed and now getting it from the computer. And the latest generation that was just introduced of this neural implant, which is pea-sized, allows you to actually download new software to the computer in your brain from outside the patient. So that's today.
My God.
And I've talked to these people, and I've asked them, you know, do you consider that part of yourself, you know, like that piece of your brain used to be? Or do you consider it just a computer, like your personal computer, that you just happen to put in your brain because it's a convenient place to keep it? And no, they consider it part of themselves, very much like that portion of the brain was. And the fact that it's, you know, made out of silicon and it's a machine and not biological doesn't matter. So people really do readily accept these extensions of themselves.
You know, when you get a car now, it comes with a GPS mapping system put in, and no matter where you go, you've got a map of that area, you've got every street, everything you've ever known. Do you foresee the day, Ray, where one day, if we want to know everything about the United States and all its history, everything about Italy, everything about Spain, everything about a baseball team, will we have chips that they will implant in our brains and we'll know everything?
Yeah, well, yes. And, you know, we have an approximation of that today with search engines. So that I talked to this woman the other day who said that her 12-year-old's computer may as well be in his brain because he carries it around everywhere with him. And when she walks in the room, she's standing in the doorway. She's just another window of his life because he's got five or six windows open on his screen. But we will be putting these computers inside our brains, and they will directly interface with our thinking process.
Stay with us. We're going to be back with all three of you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, before too long, we'll all be cyborgs, won't we? In a moment, we'll be back with our three special guests this hour. Some of the guests will change throughout the night as we talk about transhumanism on Coast to Coast AM. Charlie, you must know our friend Harry Braun, who I think is still part of Alcor, isn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah, he was on the program some time ago, told us this incredible story about how they have the head of Ted Williams, the late, great Boston Red Sox slugger, and they're just waiting to clone him one day and download his brain, and we've got another Ted Williams.
Well, it'll be the same Ted Williams, actually, according to the theory that they're proposing, which it's, you know, it always, when you hear about things like that and it's in movies, it always seems kind of silly or it's portrayed in a manner that seems like it's just out there and it's science fiction. But given the things that we've been talking about and the advent of nanotechnology, we really should be able to repair any kinds of freezing damage or any other cellular repair that would be necessary to bring somebody back, essentially.
Yeah,
so
it isn't
as far-fetched as it sounds.
We do get into some interesting philosophical questions. Some of the proposals would basically use the frozen person as a template and build a new person with new materials, sort of copying the pattern of neural connections and so on.
Basically clone him, Ray?
Well, copy the person based on the information in the frozen body. Now, the current methods of freezing actually do quite a bit of damage, so it really wouldn't be a matter so much of repairing the damage, but it's basically just scanning that frozen brain and creating a new person. At least that's one set of proposals. And you get into philosophical issues. Is that the same person? These types of philosophical issues come up in a number of different guises. But, you know, for that matter, we change also. I'm not the same set of particles I was 6 months ago. We're constantly changing the actual molecules that make us up. But these sort of abstract philosophical questions will become quite real with some of the technologies we'll be confronting.
I mean, if your memory could be downloaded into another body, whether it's a brand new one or someone else's, I would guess your mind is part of who you are.
Yeah,
you would say, well, my gosh, I'm in a different body, but I still think you would feel as if it were you, wouldn't you?
Yes. I mean, you can come to me in the morning and say, good news, Ray, we've scanned your brain and body, not just your memory, but all your personality and skills, and then reinstantiate that in some other brain, maybe made of a different substrate, electronic rather than biological. That new person will act very much like me. Say, so if you met this new person, you'd think it was me. I could still exist, though. It could be a copy without destroying the original. And so now you have two people, and they've got separate experiences from the moment that the copy is created. So you get into some sort of tricky philosophical ground here.
And Jim Gardner, what about the soul? What happens? Well, you've got it, but your other half doesn't.
Well, that's one of the things we're going to have to ponder very deeply, and that's one of the reasons it's so important that a conference like this is taking place, because I think that we probably realize even more after hearing the discussion this evening just how close some of these developments are and how incredibly revolutionary they are. And, you know, we devote enormous attention to issues like world peace and international conflict, and properly so. But compared with the looming possibility that Ray and Charlie and I have been talking about this evening, those developments really pale into insignificance. This is a moment of transition that is conceivably equal to what happened when multicellular life emerged on the face of the Earth 550 million years ago.
I mean, just to build on that, you know, this growing pessimism in some quarters in our society, because people are thinking linearly. They're looking at certain developments, like, say, climate change, and assuming that nothing is going to change, and not looking at these emerging technologies like nanotechnology. Now, nanotechnology, for example, is going to solve our energy and climate problem. Charlie's involved with solar panels,
mm-hmm.
can tell you more about this, but there's emerging a very inexpensive, very efficient, very effective, lightweight, nano-engineered solar panels that will be much less expensive per watt than fossil fuels in just a few years. We'll reach that tipping point where it'll be actually cheaper to create energy from solar energy than from fossil fuels. And we actually have 10,000 times more sunlight than we need. In other words, if we captured one part in 10,000 of the sunlight that falls on the Earth, we'd meet all of our energy needs. And I'm actually writing the white paper for the National Academy of Engineering for a plan to do this within 20 years and really meet all of our energy needs with solar energy, just by capturing a very tiny fraction of a percent of the sunlight that falls on the Earth. And this will happen because it's going to be economic to do that. And all of the discussion of climate change, you very rarely hear any mention of these emerging technologies, which will change the equation.
Will we have the capacitor power, Ray, to store this solar power? Because I think that's the shortage right now.
Well, that's a very good question, but also coming because of the intermittency of solar energy, the fact that the sun isn't always shining and you have clouds and so on, you do need to store the energy for when the sun isn't shining. There's also similar developments in nano-engineered fuel cells, actually a number of different types of technologies. You mentioned one, capacitors, but there's a number of others. Fuel cells, I think, are the most interesting. That'll also be nano-engineered and highly distributed. These will be tiny fuel cells everywhere, as opposed to what we have now, which are very centralized, like liquid natural gas tanks and nuclear power plants that are quite vulnerable and subject to this, to, you know, catastrophic destruction. So we're going to move to a very highly decentralized, distributed energy system with solar panels everywhere, other forms of renewable energy, storing the energy in nano-engineered fuel cells that are decentralized, and it'll be a very stable system. That's one of the trends also in these new technologies, is they're decentralized. I mean, look at the Internet. You know, if somebody takes a portion of it down, the information just roots around it. Nobody's taken the Internet down for even 1 second over the last 10 years because it's highly decentralized.
Yeah, you are right. It is an incredible tool, and the way we're moving with all this technology is absolutely startling. Charlie, at conferences like Transvision, are there disagreements? I mean, do scientists and authors and futurists, do they scream at each other?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are definitely disagreements, and I know Ray knows this as well as anybody. I mean, I attended the Singularity Summit, and even on stage, he was there with several other speakers, and I remember the discussion, the questions were coming up as to when, you know, they thought maybe the singularity was going to happen, and pretty much Ray was the only one who gave it at a definitive time, because he actually, you know, plotted it out on a pattern which made sense to me, and other people were non-committal, and I was surprised, because I understand. I think it's pretty much what Ray had mentioned about the intuitive linear thinking that a lot of people project when they're looking at the future, because it's such an overwhelming concept that people, even scientists, are almost afraid to project or to say what's really not that far off.
Well, I'll tell you another thing that is controversial and people disagree about, which is actually a very valid issue, which is the downsides or dangers of these technologies. I mean, we've mentioned some of the, you know, great benefits from biotechnology, overcoming cancer and heart disease and extending human longevity, but the same technology could be used by a bioterrorist to take a virus that might be benign and change it, re-engineer it to be more deadly or more communicable. And that technology has been around for a while, but these tools have gotten easier to get access to and more powerful.
Can you do it at home, Ray?
Not yet, but you can do it in a sophisticated, you know, college bioengineering lab.
Sure, okay.
Now, we've had the so-called Asilomar Conference Ethical Guidelines to prevent accidental problems, and those have actually worked very well for 30 years. There's been no accidents. But the problem now is not accidents, but, you know, some individual for some twisted ideology who would seek to be destructive, and we know that, you know, that is possible. And so the question is what to do about it, and people disagree. Some people say, oh, well, we shouldn't develop this technology at all. We should just relinquish all of biotechnology because of this danger. My view is that that's unrealistic. It would deprive us of the benefits. We would need a totalitarian system to ban technology development, and it wouldn't work. It would just drive the technology underground where it would actually be more dangerous. What I proposed is a rapid response system like we have, for example, for software viruses. People do put destructive software viruses out every day, And we have a rapid response system that captures them, reverse engineers them, creates a antiviral program in a matter of hours, spreads it virally on the internet, and within 24 hours you have a response to a new software virus. We can do something similar for biological viruses, and we don't have time to talk about all the technical details, but we have the technologies. For example, RNA interference can turn viruses off. We can sequence viruses now in a day. It took 5 years to do that for HIV. And we could create a rapid response system. So if a terrorist, you know, puts out a dangerous virus, and that will happen someday, we can have a way of actually combating that, you know, within a matter of days.
Do you three ever talk about, you know, the possibilities that this planet might have too many people, and that there might be some groups out there that would love to get the population reduced and would use this kind of technology to do that? Does that ever come up?
Well, I don't think we have too many people. We actually have, you know, quite enough resources. I mentioned we actually have 10,000 times more sunlight than we need to meet our energy needs just through sunlight. And we have plenty of stuff. We have nanotechnology to...
But that's free, right?
To reorganize it into the various products that we need. But the reason that people would be destructive is not because we have too many people. It's because of these destructive ideologies. I mean, the message of 9/11 was that people will find some reason to cause destruction if they have the access to the tools.
Well, why would the oil companies, for example, want us to move into solar power, which I think is a brilliant idea, when the sun is free? All we have to do is pay for the equipment, and we're done. Why would, you know, I could see the power companies going crazy with this kind of technology.
Well, it is getting root now. The amount of solar power is doubling every 2 years. That'll multiply it by 1,000 in 20 years, and it's already meeting more than one part in 1,000 of our energy needs. And at that rate, it will meet all of our energy needs. The venture capital companies and private equity companies have put actually already now billions of dollars into these new solar energy companies and fuel cells and other new energy companies. It's a major area of investment, including from the traditional power companies who are hedging their bets. So they're not really able to, you know, squelch this technology. It is getting enough root now and has some big players and power behind it.
Let me just add to that, this Jim Gardner. I think the smart ones, you're going to be able to separate out, to not to be too cute with words, the dinosaurs from the progressive ones by seeing which of the traditional oil companies, in fact, seriously invest in solar and related technologies.
But you know, let's say for the house. You know, I'd love to have complete 100% solar power for the house. Last summer, we had some severe storms in St. Louis when I was back there. I go back and forth between St. Louis and Los Angeles. Homes were knocked out for a very long time. If we had our own solar system, we wouldn't have to worry about that. We wouldn't have, you know, you could probably still have the grid and put your power back on the grid so others could use it. But what would it cost in let's say, 10 years, Charlie, you would know this, to buy the right kind of solar equipment to fully contain your house?
Well, in 10 years, I'm not sure. I'm sure it's going to be very inexpensive because the costs are coming down right now. I mean, I do construction on green houses or houses that try to do zero energy consumption with photovoltaic panels, and it's not a lot more expensive than if you just to build a regular house. I mean, it might be instead of a house that you might end up selling, for example, a house that might be sold for, say, $300,000. If you added on the solar panels, it might be $400,000. But for that additional $100,000, you essentially have no gas bills or electric bills, and the photovoltaic panels that are across the rooftops would provide you with the power necessary. And in fact, if you were able to overproduce, you could sell. You would still be hooked up to the electric company, but you could sell it back. So that's kind of what I'm doing, and I think that in the near future, it should come down even more. So,
well, it'll have to. I mean, if you're spending, let's say, in gas and electric $5,000 a year, and that's pretty high for most houses, it's going to take a long time to pay off that $100,000, Jim.
Charlie will, I'm sure, attest the cost of the solar energy panels is coming down rapidly. We're not yet at the tipping point. Right now, solar energy is more expensive than fossil fuel alternatives. But if you look, but fossil fuels are either steady or going up. Solar energy is on a downward curve. You can see the crossover is only a few years away. So if you go out even 3, 4, 5 years, it's going to become less expensive and then increasingly less expensive to use these renewable forms of energy.
I would hope that we could get some tax breaks with this, significant.
Well, they do. They offer tax breaks, particularly if you buy that. I mean, they're doing that for cars. If you buy a hybrid, you get money back. Each state offers different things, and I think the federal government is now trying to implement that as well.
Well, it sure would pay off, I think, in the long run. I just don't know if the big power companies right now that are making millions and billions would want to see this happen, Charlie.
Well, I don't think they have a lot of choice. I mean, the future is coming whether anybody likes it or not. And these technologies, like Ray was saying, you can't stop them. I mean, you can try, but really there's going to be somebody somewhere building it. And when they do, they're going to dominate the market. And so yeah, I think these oil companies, they pretty much have to start to accept the reality of what's going to happen and reinvest their monies into these kinds of energies.
Charlie, we're going to lose you this hour, so tell us a little bit more about the conference, exactly where and when.
Well, the conference is going to be held this coming week. It's going to be the 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th, and it's going to be held at the Field Museum in Chicago. We're going to have about 35 to 40 speakers, including the two, both Ray and James, that are on the show. And like I said, you can go to the website, www.transvision2007.com. And then also, as an extension of gratitude towards you and your listeners, we were going to offer a discount for anybody that called in and entered the code COAST2COAST. So they would get 40% off of the ticket prices if they're still.
Well, we've got a lot of people listening to us on WLS in Chicago. It's huge, so maybe they'll come by, and or people in that region as well.
Yeah, I hope so. It's going to be fascinating, and we're going to talk about, like I said, everything that we discussed tonight, as well as, we're going to talk about, I think you mentioned about concerns for overpopulation. One of the things we're going to talk about is about terraformation and going to other planets at some point in the future. So it's going to be really interesting.
How's Shatner going to get there? You're going to beam him aboard?
We're going to get Scotty and see what he can do. Fly him. It's going to be fun. I think it's going to be exciting. And it's fun to have the celebrities there. I think it's time, we got to attach celebrities. I mean, if Scientology's got John Travolta, we could at least have Shatner, I would say.
Charlie has put together a great panel of speakers. It's really all the key thinkers in the different areas of this topic.
All right, Ray, you stay with us, and Jim, you're going to stay with us for the entire evening. Charlie, we're going to say sayonara to you for the night, and thank you so much for being on the program, Charlie.
Okay, well, thank you, George. I appreciate you having me.
Okay, my friend. Sounds like a great conference, and we'll be back in just a moment. Barbara Marks Hubbard, doctor type, will be joining us next hour as well. She'll be a part of the Transhumanism Conference and also will participate in this roundtable discussion. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.